Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the caramel kid?
What?
If anyone doesn't know what the hell that sharp pitch, high pitch noise is, Jermaine, what are you doing, Jermaine? What's going on?
I just thought the poor man Usain Bolt football boots, and I'm breaking them in. You've got to wear them around the house. I'm breaking them in. I'm doing it before my girlfriend gets back, because then I won't get in trouble.
Isn't it like ice skating, though? Aren't you slipping around everywhere?
I'm treading carefully.
You've got to shut up. You sit down. All I can hear is this noise. Sit down.
Wait, let me get to my chair. Okay. So what's going on? What's going on in the world of Sean and Sean? What's going on?
Well, Sean's had a bad week. He's been running badly. After that half marathon, I've been knocked out. I've been so tired. This is last week, the big half we ran. I've been so tired. I've been able to really run. I've been getting up late. My daughter's been waking me up in the night. I've been a grouch. I've been in a bad mood. It's been funny. But I was really thinking about giving up on the old marathon idea. But I ran 20 miles yesterday. Yesterday was Sunday. I ran 20 miles and I ran all right. It was windy, but I ran in around 4 minute Ks. 20 miles and I felt all right, so who knows, I might have come out the back of it, but it wasn't a good week. But what about you? You been all right after the big half?
I struggled for 3 days,
yeah,
and then by the end of the week I was fine. I was like running and obviously playing football and stuff, yeah, and I was all right,
yeah.
But I was overloading on loads of like sugars and foods, trying to get my glucose back and stuff,
yeah. Okay, maybe that's what I needed to do. Get back on the sugar. But anyway, we're too old now, Jermaine. We're suffering. After a big effort, we suffer for a week, which is strange. But yeah, we're not those spring chickens anymore.
We ain't even halfway yet. We ain't old.
Yeah. There's a lot of half marathons been happening around the country these last weekend. If anyone's been running and hasn't joined in the Battle of the Podcasts, we need your help. So go to your Strava if you run a half marathon at the weekend and please put on that you are... Join the Battle of the Podcast group. Also add that you are part of Let's Get Running and you are Team Let's Get Running and declare for us. If you can do that, that'd be great.
But do you know what the other teams run?
I think we were good on the we did well on the Count Hosts. One, which is the host's show. So we did well on that. I think we might have nipped it with that one, but I'm not sure about
nipped
the,
it. We nipped it.
I'm not sure. I think Bren from Cloud259, he ran the New York half. And I think he might have been a similar time to you, actually, Jermaine. So, yeah, it could be. It's not that far away from being, you know. It's not.
But was he the fastest or the second fastest?
I think he was second fastest.
Uh-oh.
So, I'll have a little look. But, we'll keep going. We don't finish to the end of March. So, keep everyone getting your results in if you can.
So you could do another one then, Sean.
I can do another one. I'm not going to bother, but I could do another one. Didn't you
tell me you're doing a half marathon this week coming up?
No, I'm doing a marathon. I tried to get a place in a marathon this weekend down in Amstelveen. People, never the listeners will know what I'm talking about. But I'm running down there. There's a marathon and it's not like a big marathon event, but I might just use it as a training run. So I should be doing a 40K this weekend. So I thought, why not do a 40K with someone handing some drinks out halfway round? So I'm going to go in it now.
But did you have to pay to race? Was it?
Yeah, €30. But it's for a local athletics club, so I don't mind so much paying that money out if it's going back to a good cause. So, yeah, okay, I might go and do that and do a run around it. Go around the Amsterdam Bos, which is the forest. So it'd be quite nice. My wife and daughter are going to come out and watch, and it should be a nice little run. Hopefully I'll be... back feeling better about running after that weekend, after that race. But hey, but there's been loads of in our new feature, Running News, we're looking at the world of running, what's going on. There's been big half marathons across the country this weekend, one of which was the Reading Half. Did you see this? Victories for Steph Twell. She ran 1:11 at Reading. The top
three. Steph Twell ran the big hot that we did at London, and she ran Reading the week after.
She did, yeah, she did, and she won it. She was over a minute ahead of the nearest competitor, Louise Small, and Stephanie Davis making up the top three in that race. So yes, you did two in a row. And across on the men's race, we had Scott Overall won 103.50. Matt Clowes, who's running pretty well. I'm not sure if Matt's doing the marathon, but he's running pretty strong. And he did 104.03. And Paulus Sarafel, he ran 104.12. So some real fast racing over in Reading. And interesting, Scott's coached by Alan Sawyer. Do you know Alan?
Yeah, I know Alan. He's a little crazy, I know. Yeah.
He's a little crazy. Well, he had three major city half marathon winners this weekend. So Scott won the men's Reading, and also over in Bath, Chris Thompson won. And I think he won in 103, about 50. I think he was the winner over there in Bath. So he coaches both of those, Alan. And also he coaches Kate Reid. So anyone who used to know runners back in maybe 5-10 years ago, Kate Reid was a real talent. She came through and she was looking really strong. But she's not been seen for ages. She's back. She won the Bath Half Marathon for the women. So three winners for Alan Sawyer. But he used to coach Mo, didn't he, at one stage? He was Mo's coach before Mo went over and joined the boys in America, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I could tell Alan Sawyer's great because for one whole year, he had curry for dinner every single night.
How do you know that?
Because he was bragging and he turned into a real bloater, and then all of a sudden he needed to lose weight to look, you know, like young, hip and trendy. So he just lost loads and loads of weight and he was like he got really slim. And the funniest story I've ever heard about Alan, you know, the old, before it was Diamond League, it was called Golden League.
Yeah,
and you used to get a watch with the event on the back that you won. So you get a Swiss watch, like an Omega. And this athlete was like, oh yeah, it's waterproof. And then apparently Alan grabbed it, threw it into a pint, and it stopped ticking. He goes, well, it's a fake and it's no good. He just threw it into a pint and it stopped ticking.
Well, completely ruined £1,000 watch.
Yeah.
So Alan, not only because he coaches great athletes, he ruins watches. That's his
pattern. And loves curry.
Are you sure you eat every curry every night for a year?
Yeah. Fact. That's a fact.
Fact. So that was running this weekend. There's lots of other races around. I think there's the Fleet Half Marathon. But those are the big highlights from the UK. We also had Callum Hawkins running over in Lisbon. I know that's a flat and fast. In the old days, that used to be the way everyone used to go to set the world record because it was slightly downhill. Do you remember that? I think Paul Turgot ran an insane time in Lisbon, but he ran over there. I think he's a bit disappointed with his run. He ran 62.52, but still going strong. Some encouraging performances before London Marathon. Let's look out for those. On this week's show, we are interviewing Scott Douglas. Scott Douglas is a author. He lives over in America. He has been editor of various running publications, including working at Runner's World, Running Times. And he is co-author of one of the most famous marathon books of all time, the Pete Fitzinger Expert Marathoning. He knows his stuff. He's a experienced journalist and runner. But we weren't talking about marathon. We were talking about mental health. So he's also written a book talking about the benefits of running to mental health. So we talked a bit about that, about him managing his condition, his depression through running. So we thought we'd have a bit of a chat about running and mental health. So obviously,
so you want to talk about the pros, like how running helps you mentally but in a positive way?
Yeah, so in my day job I run training groups for various companies, and obviously one of the main selling points for setting these running clubs up is the benefit to both your productivity and your creativity of running. But obviously we all know that, but the stuff that I found was really interesting was There's various studies into the fact that actually running and exercise triggers growth in certain parts of your brain. So actually by running, you are making your brain bigger, which is nuts. I thought is in the hippocampus, stuff that's around productivity.
It makes it bigger. It makes it bigger, but do you use it?
Well, that's another question altogether. But yet it enables growth of neurons in those parts of the brain. So actually it can potentially make you better. But I don't know about you. Running for me has been amazing in helping me manage my life. Like I think I'm a different person because I've run, and there's been dark times in my life where running has helped me find something in the world. Do you know what I mean? Like at university, I wasn't having a good time, and running helped me find people to hang out with, and it helped me to realise that I wanted to stick around an extra and stay there. What do you think? Do you think it's
yeah, I think it's a good distraction, right. Like, you know, like getting away from what you're doing and stuff. But also, it can have a negative.
Yeah.
Because most runners get obsessive, and, you know, like they're trying to hit their times. Yeah. They're trying to beat people. And then, like, good example, Addy Badgley. He's like, he got chronic depression because he knew he was in good shape but could never perform when he got to the big stage. You know, good example was 2012 Olympics. Got knocked out in the first round. Yeah. And the next day, he got the Bushy Park World Record.
Yeah.
The park run.
Yeah. Wow. So just, and no pressure, went out and he absolutely blasted it.
Yeah. So it's like, athletes, a good example is me, like last week when I was running, I was getting really frustrated and annoyed because obviously I've got all these people, they looked awful going past me because I was thinking I should be beating them. So he's like, you put pressure on yourself because you want to, you think I should be doing better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's happened a lot of me as well. Like, because my job is running. So I've decided to make my career about running. So everything in my life is tied up in the act of running. Do you know what I mean? So when it's not going very well, and when I think I can do better than that, and it's not, I'm not gaining what I think is the recognition for the effort I'm putting in, it dictates your whole life because I'm defined by running, which is what I think Andrew Badgley was saying. He became, because he came back from injury and things, and he wasn't the runner he was. Because he was defined, he felt he was defined by running, and he wasn't achieving what he wanted to. It became a unbearable strain on him. And I think that's true. That's true. He can go the other way.
But this is where you need, because that's why I didn't go to a running university, because if you do get injured, it's depressing. Yeah. And obviously it's depressing anyway, but if you're around other people running, but I went to a university, well, arts. So they don't give a shit about athletics. All they care is about what stroke, you know, Picasso used and stuff. So it's, in life, it's good to, like, you know, 50-50.
Yeah.
And it's so all the people that, you know, like got the normal day jobs and then do the running, it's a much healthier balance than, I wouldn't say than a pro runner, but I think it's a healthier balance.
And a lot of the guys, I remember when we were coming through as runners, right? There was a lot of money in funding, and a lot of people were getting funding. Remember this? Like, it was probably when we were in our late 20s, right? Loads of people were getting on funding, and it was like the requirements of funding weren't that high, but nobody was really going on to go any further, because actually when people became professional athletes, or when they based their life out running, they couldn't do it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well,
I think it's got tighter now to get funding. It's much harder now, because
the first time I got put on funding, the structure was, if you qualified for the championships, you got paid like 20,000 or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So loads of people would qualify, make it to the championship, and then run crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they've done what they needed to do because they've got their money.
Yeah. And do you think people struggle with the actual becoming pro athletes, but becoming, basing their whole lives around running?
Sometimes, because you've almost got too much time to think.
Yeah.
Because you know, oh, I've got to stay at home and rest.
Yeah.
If you don't like keep your brain occupied, you start thinking about how you're gonna take a couple of seconds off that, you know, like the reps that you're gonna do in the evening and stuff. You start getting nervous about the training sessions you're doing. So it's actually good to keep your mind occupied doing other stuff.
Yeah. And there's that guy in Japan, isn't there, that everyone loves, called Yuki Kawauchi, who basically they call him the citizen runner because he refuses. Obviously, there's money in Japan for running. You could be a professional athlete, but he refuses to do that because he likes to work a day job and to have that distraction from his life. So yeah, it can work. You can become too obsessed with it. But hey, but let's
just... this day and age, you just pick up your phone and you're on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. So you got distractions anyway now.
Yeah, yeah. We're in the modern day. Too many distractions. But let's have a listen to Scott. Listen to what he research he did in his book and how he's used running throughout his life. Here we go. So this morning on the show, we are talking to Scott Douglas. the former one of the editors of Running Times and Runner's World, and co-author of a number of fairly famous running books. I was talking the other day to a friend about the advanced marathoning.
Right.
That's all
right.
On your resume.
Correct.
and you're, where are you now, Scott? You're over in the east coast of the US.
Yeah, I'm in Portland, Maine, sort of the northeast, upper northeast of the US, a couple hours north of Boston.
Lovely. And then we were just having a chat off air, let's say, about the running now. But what, are you training for anything specifically? Are you getting out and running to run a lot at the moment, or is the weather making
I mean, I always run a decent amount. So right now I'm sort of in a maintenance 50 miles a week sort of phase. My big running goal for the year, other than to not get injured, my big running goal for the year is a 50 miler, but that's in November.
Okay.
So, nice. So I'm pretty busy with work right now. So I'm sort of just, you know, running a maintenance 50 miles a week. Yeah. And then, you know, starting in the spring and summer, we'll start ramping up for this 50 miler in the fall.
Okay, great. Nice. And for most people, a maintenance of 50 miles is pretty, is not a bad mileage, really. So you're still competing.
We all have our own standards.
Yeah. And you're evidently, obviously, you're someone who has a great love for running in the sport. I saw some of the, you've had, is it 100,000 lifetime miles over the course of your running career? Is that correct?
By now, more than that. But yeah. But the thing is, okay, so, you know, it sounds like a lot, but yeah. March, I'll have been running for 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's not like I ever regularly ran 150 miles a week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you keep plugging, I mean, if you do 50 miles a week for 40 years, you know, you easily get to 100,000 miles, you know?
It adds up. Yeah. But how did it all begin then? How did your relationship with running start?
I had an opportunity a couple times I'm not sure what the equivalent in the UK is, but middle school, you know, so you're in your early teens. There were a couple times in phys ed class where one option was to just sort of go run for the gym period. Hmm. And I did that because I didn't like shot putting or long jumping or sprinting. And I just really enjoyed sort of just running around the school grounds for 20 or 30 minutes.
Hmm.
And I had one of my sisters who was older, had a friend who was the state cross country champion. And I got to know him a little bit. And I knew that he would go out and run for like 20 miles. And I just thought that was so cool that he could just be so sort of independent and capable and just sort of go do his own thing for as long as short as he wanted. And so I just decided I was going to start running and go out for the cross country team in high school, you know, and I didn't know that nobody gets cut from the cross country team, at least here in the States. You know, so I started running the year before I started high school because I wanted to be ready.
Yeah.
So I just started running on my own.
Yeah.
And just started running a lot and loved it immediately.
Oh, nice. And so you would, you initially went and you enjoyed the competition things at high school. Did you compete regularly for the team?
Yeah. So I ran cross country, indoor track and outdoor track, you know, every year in high school. And also in high school, did a fair amount of road racing, which my coach wasn't real big on. But I really enjoyed that also. And it was great to, like, as a teen who sort of, you know, started thinking like, gosh, I hope I can run for the rest of my life, you know, but this is like the late 70s, early 80s, and it wasn't as common as it is now.
Yeah.
And so I would meet these guys at road races and I was like, oh, wow, this guy's like 35 years old and he's still running, you know? And so it was great to meet like these sort of people to like, hey, it can be done, you know?
Yeah. And why do you think you particularly had any attributes that made you someone who took it up and who was successful at the sport?
Sure. The appeal of it, I think, was a couple things. I'm one who very much seems to benefit from the feel-good brain chemicals that get released when we run.
Yeah.
And I couldn't articulate it at the time, but I, you know, just certainly knew that, like, this is the highlight of my day. Yeah. And the way that I feel during and after, gosh, if I could feel that way all the time, you know, that'd be pretty cool.
Hmm.
So I always, you know, so I never had a problem getting myself out to run, you know, always looked forward to it. I was okay, but not great, you know, sort of above average. But I, you know, sort of the standard thing that you hear of like, I, you know, it was great to be able to see, like, if I do this, then I, if I do this ABC, then I get these results, more or less, right? Yeah. And the harder I work, the better I'll do. Very straightforward. And then I certainly have my, like a lot of runners, sort of, you know, obsessive type personality quirks that, you know, running often rewards, right? Up to a point, but it's a pretty big point. You know, you have to run a lot to get to the point of diminishing returns. And so, you know, it sort of meshed with my personality, like, well, if 8 miles is good, then 10 miles is even better, you know? And like how, oh, my friend ran 10 miles today, so I'm going to go run 12, sort of thing. It just sort of worked well with my personality.
And you've written about how you suffered from, is it dysthymia?
Dysthymia?
Well, can you give us some background? What does it mean?
Right. So dysthymia is sort of a chronic low-grade depression. So when you hear people talk about being depressed, sort of the image that most people might immediately get is the person who can't get up off, who was, you know, severely depressed, can't get off the couch, can't go to work, you know, can't interact with other people. I've never had that, you know, fortunately. Mine is more sort of just a constant presence of just sort of dissatisfaction about the structure of the universe and sort of a diminished ability to experience pleasure, that it seems like other people are able to experience pleasure more. My analogy in running terms is, so like where my left hamstring attaches to the pelvis, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have this, where you sit for 20 minutes and it starts tightening up, and you know, it's just sort of this constant low-grade sort of problem in my left hamstring, and that's sort of that's sort of the running analogy to my dysthymia. Like, it's never horrible. Like, it doesn't get in the way of, it doesn't prevent me from doing what I want to do, but it's just sort of always there, you know, and I'm always sort of conscious of it. And if I don't take care of myself, both the hamstring and the dysthymia can, you know, become too much of a interference in how I want to live.
Okay. And did you have those kind of thoughts as it was, even as a teenager, were you?
I started running at about the same time that all this sort of stuff sort of really crystallized in terms of my mental state. And so I was very fortunate to discover running at soon after all this stuff sort of took up residence.
And what sort of thoughts were you having then before you started running?
So, pretty standard teenage thoughts of like, what is the point of existence? I'll try to tell the story briefly, but in biology class, we learned about a bug that stayed alive for 24 hours, and it was, you know, and it didn't even eat while it was alive, you know, so it was born that day, it mated, and then by the next day it was dead. And I remember like doing my homework that night thinking like, what is the point? Like, why can't they be alive for 2 days, right? And have like a day that they can enjoy and eat and all this sort of stuff. And it's just sort of like, you know, like, well, what would be the point of that? And I started applying that to sort of like my existence and other people, you know, what is the point of any existence? So yeah, those kind of sort of, you know, teenage philosophy thoughts were sort of how it really first sort of crystallized. And then just sort of things often felt like just like an obligation more than I just never like looked forward to much of what was, you know, it just seemed like, oh, I'm supposed to do this, now I'm supposed to do that, now I'm supposed to do this. Like, I was very good at school. I enjoyed being good at school, but it wasn't like inherently interesting, right? I was going to school so that I was doing well in high school so that I could get into a good college. And then I would say, well, I'm going to do good in college so that I can get a good job. Right. And it's just, you know, it was very easy at that time to sort of think, well, okay, but what's the point of that? Cause then it's just onto this next thing that I'm obligation. So those were the sorts of thoughts that, you know, in 13, 14 years old.
And is it quite a common thing then? Cause for me, like talking to you, I seem to have a similar a thing. Like looking back, it feels like, all right, now I'm going to do this race because it wants to get me to this point, and then the next race I've got to be doing this. And in my life, it's a series of tasks that I get through in the hope of ending up somewhere else. Is it quite a common affliction?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you know, if you look in the States, it's said that in any 1 year, like 8 to 10 people could meet the criteria for depression.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And
the relevant thing is how much it interferes with the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I initially started thinking like this and when I was a teen, mm-hmm. it could be overwhelming in terms of like enjoying any part of my life and looking and like sort of, gosh, I'm going to be alive for another 70 years. Like I got to put up with this for another 70 years. You know, now I'm in my mid 50s and I have learned to build things into my life that regularly provide pleasure.
Okay.
And things to look that I genuinely look forward to, you know, and that's one way that running has been key to, you know, enjoying my life for the near 40 years that I've done it. And marriage is the other big.
And at that stage, when you were as a teenager and you were run, did you put the two together? Like, you think, I'm enjoying running, so I'm going to do it to deal with this depression? Or was it came as a natural progression?
Yeah, it was more sort of like, wow, I certainly enjoyed running as most, as I said, usually the highlight of the day and something to always look forward to the next day.
Mm.
I didn't, at the time, depression wasn't something that was talked about openly, or if it was talked about, it was sort of these more extreme cases of, you know, the person who can't, who, you know, shut, you know, disappeared for 2 months, you know, not the person who at the time when I was in school, you know, got straight A's and had perfect attendance, sort of stuff. So I didn't put them together at the time. It wasn't until the mid 1990s when I was in my early 30s. That there began to be more talk about depression, and the now coach, but then great runner Alberto Salazar, talked a little bit about it in the mid 90s. And in writing an article about him and researching it, someone's like, "Oh gosh, this sounds like me." And so then I went and saw somebody got the official diagnosis.
Yeah, and did then running. Did running change? Did running, when you had a diagnosis, 47, did running's purpose for you and importance change at all?
Not really. I sort of knew that running was sort of uniquely capable of bolstering me through daily life. I already had at that time, what would it be? Gosh, more than 15 years of experience of sort of living it like that every day. So it was more just sort of like, oh, good. Like there's an official name to it, you know, sort of like when you have an injury and like if somebody says, oh, well, that injury is such and such, you know, it sort of feels like, oh, good. Well, at least I know what it is, you know, rather than this amorphous, like, what is this? What do I do about it? Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't like I then started running more or whatever. I just, you know, it sort of boosted my appreciation and recognition of the role of running in my life.
Obviously, as time's gone on, you said the more of a recognition of depression. And have you noticed, obviously lately, one of the reasons for the book, I guess, is to look at the research around the benefits of exercise and a potential treatment for people with depressive tendencies. Right. Does your experience tally with a lot of the research and obviously those runners that you've come into contact with in your job? Does it tally with the findings that you've encountered in this research that you've looked into?
Yeah, very much so. If anything, the research is sort of catching up to what a lot of people, including me, you know, sort of discovered on their own of the profound and in some ways unique benefits of exercise and I would say, especially running, for you know, sort of helping to manage mental health. So the research is, you know, there's a lot of things like that with running where the research catches up to what runners sort of discover on their own. You know, runners were doing tempo runs long before they got articulated in a lab. You know,
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there was certainly nothing in the research. It was like, oh gosh, we've been going about this all wrong by running to manage our mental health. Yeah. The one thing that was really surprising in writing this, in writing my book, was, and I had not encountered this until I started researching this book, and sort of crazy that I had to write the book to learn this, is that there are clinical trials where exercise is at least as effective as the standard forms of treatment for depression or anxiety, those being medication and, talk therapy, counseling. Yeah. And there are cases, there's evidence that exercise alone is, sort of a standalone treatment for conditions in the same way that medication and talk therapy can be. Yeah. And then, of course, exercise has the I would argue, many benefits above and beyond those that make it more effective. Yeah.
Yeah. And I should have sort of asked before this question, is what brought you to run the book? What was the motivation behind sort of run the book, write the book rather? What was the motivation behind writing this book?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it should be pretty obvious by now that the role that running has played in my own mental health for a long time. And I knew that I wasn't alone. Mm. But I also hadn't seen much that sort of articulated sort of my experience and what I knew to be many other people's experience, things about exercise and mental health seem to do with like, start an exercise program and you'll feel better, which is true. Hmm. But there wasn't much about like, here's all these people, me included, who are sort of self-medicating, for lack of a better term. Yeah. And are we correct in doing so? And what might be the unique benefits of doing this? So that was sort of my basic motivation, was to sort of just to say, to present the, to find what evidence there was, and there turned out to be a staggering amount, and present it in combination with sort of, my story and lots of other people's stories about the role of running and managing their mental health.
Yeah. And coming out from the stories, or your own and the other people's, what is unique about running, you think? I know that's a difficult question, but is there something unique about running that makes it so good?
So if you look at, running, do you mean like running compared to other forms of exercise?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me back up. Actually, I would say exercise in general has these sort of, we all focus on brain chemistry, and people have heard of, that's what the medications attempt to address. And we've all heard of, these feel good chemicals that are released during running, but running has, for most of us, There's more to your mental health than just your brain chemistry, right? So there's sort of like your image of yourself, and running gives us, in my case daily, but running gives us regular opportunities to see ourselves, like set a goal, achieve it, realize that we can be like that in other parts of our lives, and that to me, it seems fundamentally different than I need to take a pill to be better. I mean, I'm not anti-medication. I take an antidepressant, but there's this whole psychology aspect of exercise that isn't present in where you're having to take a medicine or you're having to go see a therapist once a week. Poor me, I can't get by without these things, where exercise, in contrast, is I am going to go do this thing that's going to make me better.
Yeah.
So that's exercise in general. I would argue that running is uniquely effective for a few reasons. One being the convenience, obviously, the ability to do it pretty much any day of the year, pretty much anywhere. If consistency is an important aspect of using exercise to manage your mental health, then running, for logistical reasons, you can make the pretty sound argument that it's, better than swimming. You go on vacation, you have to worry about where's the pool. So convenience. There's also the in terms of the brain chemistry stuff, most of the research shows that it's, this stuff gets released at the highest level as sort of a sustained moderate effort. And we can all go out and just sort of hit our sort of cruise running pace, right?
Yeah.
Where you're not jogging, but you're not, you know, you're not doing a tempo run, and you just sort of, I can hold this pace for an hour or 2 hours, whatever.
Yeah.
That's it's at that intensity that the feel good brain chemicals are released at the highest amounts.
Okay.
And that sort of sustained effort is, I would argue, theoretically harder to achieve, especially for a long time, in a lot of other sports, right? So you go out and ride your bike, you go downhill, you know, you sort of don't have as much control over at what effort level you're working at.
Yeah.
And then something like swimming, you know, you have to spend 3 months just getting good enough at technique just to, you know, to be able to reach that state,
yeah.
So, and then finally, there is some, humans didn't evolve cycling, humans didn't evolve swimming.
Yeah.
So there is a very scant, but it's tantalizing evidence of there's something about the footfalls, the footsteps, sending, you know, nerve signals to our brains that could be unique to running. Probably some of your listeners have, I certainly just, you know, that sort of, that rhythm can sort of be entrancing, you know, that would be my spiel for running's, primacy.
And in some cases, I guess there is that the evidence is overwhelming for the benefits of it, but is there potential for running to go the other way and become, so running addiction a detrimental part on people's mental health? Did you encounter much of that in the book, or?
Yeah, you can find people. Yeah, I've found some people for whom that's the case. So you said addiction. I was trying to think, like, what's a good definition of addiction?
Yeah.
And I tend to think of it as like a behavior that you initially started to address some sort of problem that has become its own problem. Like that may have become a bigger problem than the problem you were trying to address.
Yeah.
The thing about, but if you say that somebody is, addicted to cigarettes, there's like never a good use of cigarettes, right?
Yeah.
Or gambling. Like it's hard to, if somebody has a gambling addiction, they don't go through a phase where they're just sort of gambling moderately, right? whereas running, it seems like, you know, it's more natural for us to sort of have phases where we're in perfect harmony with how our running should be, but then there might be the case of leaning on running too much for our mental health. Mm-hmm. That's where I would say that, I talked with some people, I've had that a couple times too, mm-hmm. where, you know, for me, it would be like, I know I'm injured. I know I shouldn't go out and run. I'm just going to make it worse. But I'm having a horrible day, and you know, I've had the past week's been horrible anyway. And then, of course, I'm that much more distressed because I'm injured. You know, I mean, it's stupid. You know, rationally, it's stupid. Like, oh, I'll go out and run, and that'll make things better. You know, when you know it's just making things worse.
Yeah.
So I think that would be an example I would think of it as like leaning on running too much for the state of your mental health. Like, I think about it in terms of my wife has said to me, like, you know, like, I'm not responsible for your happiness, which is true.
Mm.
But, you know, we all, but it's can be easy to sort of lean too much on my wife, right? Instead of having that relationship in the right balance where she's, you know, makes every day better and is supportive, but isn't like, I'm not reliant on her for my well-being.
Yeah. And has there been anyone over the course of your writing career that you thought you've been inspired almost by their healthy attitude to both their mental health and to their relationship with running that you?
So I don't know how well known he is in the UK. Here in the United States, there's a guy named Ambie Burfoot who was the editor of Runner's World for a long time. He won the 1968 Boston Marathon.
Hmm.
So Ambie is now in his early 70s. And this is, you know, this is more recent in terms of him being something that, you know, him having things to learn from that I think, you know, now that I'm in my 50s, he was at one time, he was half a second off the US record for the marathon, you know, so he's very, very, very good. And, you know, I've gotten to be friends with Ambie over the last decade or so and have seen how he finds ways to keep finding joy in running, despite that, you know, while still, you know, he's a numbers guy, he can tell you exactly how much percent slower he is than he was, you know, 50 years ago or whatever. So he's still trying, but while recognizing, like, of course, I'm never going to be able to do what I did back then. But now is, you know, now is when I'm alive. Hmm. You know, he knows even more so than I do, but I certainly have enough evidence of people I know who, like, don't run anymore for whatever reason. And so, you know, but he especially has all this evidence of, like, every day I get to run is like a bonus, you know, or like a something to be celebrated. So that's somebody who I barely, now that I'm well into middle age, I was like, okay, that'd be great to be like Ambi when I'm in my 70s, you know. Yeah. You know, he still runs, you know, he still runs the Boston Marathon most years and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And but is, you know, he's able to really find new things in it that continue to appeal to him and motivate him.
Okay. And that was kind of my next kind of question is there advice you think you'd give to people to have a continued relationship with running and to have a healthy relationship with running?
Yeah, I think a really big thing is to keep looking for new avenues to explore. Like, there's tons of ways to be a runner, right? Even just within the part of running that consists of going to races, you know, there's you can run trail ultras, you can run road 5Ks, you can run track 800s. You know, there's just tons of different things to explore. And how many people have really sort of looked at all the possibilities and defined, like, wow, what really speaks to me? And then the second thing would be like to accept and, like, not get mad about, but sort of look forward to the fact that what appeals to you most when you're 25 might be different than when you're 45. And that's great. I mean, it would be horrible if the only thing, like, if the only option was, like, whatever it was, like, when you're 22, like, that's what running has to be, you know? I mean, if that still is the main thing for you when you're 40 or whatever, great. But it's likely it won't be, right? So there's all these other parts that, like, be open to the possibility that, like, well, maybe I'll do such and such, you know? Right now, like, I you know, like, running road 5Ks doesn't mean anything to me. But it might when I turn 60. You know, and if I sort of feel myself going in that direction, then that's what I'll do. So being open to new things and then being open to the idea that at different times in your running life, there are different things that you might want to be open to.
Fantastic. And I've got three final questions to ask.
Okay.
And they are quick fire questions. And we ask them to
everybody. So no long ramble.
You can actually. I don't mind a bit of a ramble. That's fine. We've got plenty of time. But the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
It would be on a trail in New Zealand. Even though I've never been there, I've always wanted to go there. I have some friends who live there. It looks fantastic. Plus, it's summer there and it's winter here.
Yeah, good answer. I've been to the South Island. I've got a friend who lives okay. in the North Island, and it is incredible. You can drive for an hour and be in a completely different, almost like part of the world. It seems like about three different continents shoved into one place. So yeah, a long trail run would be incredible there, I think. So good choice. The second one is, recommend our listeners something. It can be something physical, book, podcast, documentary, film, or an experience. Anything you want to recommend. It's a bit open.
I'll go with a book. There's a book. The most engrossing book I read last year is a novel called The Over Story by an American author named Richard Powers. And it's like everything that a novel should be. It's just like every night I couldn't wait to just dive into this amazing world that he had created. That would be it.
Okay, perfect. I'll put a link on the show notes.
Yeah.
For your book as well, I think, I should say.
Okay.
And what in your opinion is the best single endurance performance, running performance, in history?
All right, I'm not pandering. I would say Paula Radcliffe 2:15:25 marathon world record. It's because, you know, women's sub 220s are still a rarity, but at the time were really a rarity, and she just that is just an astounding performance.
Yeah. It was just relentless, wasn't it? The tempo she just continued to churn out mile after mile was just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And just sort of like, I don't care what the, yeah. Like, I don't care that 219 is a big deal for a woman. Like, I'm going out at, you know, whatever,
yeah.
You know, what is that? This fight. Yeah. And the fact that that was 2003. So yeah, it'd be 16 years at London.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a, yeah, that would be it.
Yeah. Incredible. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Scott. We'll wish you success with the book and your continued writing. We'll put a link up for people. I guess Amazon is the best place to pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Fantastic. Yep. Fantastic. And hopefully, and good luck with your trail run coming up in October.
Thanks a lot.
So nice of you there, Scott. Thanks to him for giving up his time. But we should cut to reviews, man, because last week I was halfway through talking about reviews and my iPad cut out. So I've got those reviews back. Schoolboy error. Here we go.
Isn't it? If we were supposed to be a professional outfit, not semi-pro.
We did have a couple of chats. People were... I did speak to a couple of guys who were a bit sort of challenging a couple of the opinions that maybe Tim put forward in the last podcast, perhaps about having an A and B race in the world cross country and kind of maybe could it sounded a bit discriminatory, perhaps to African runners, which is interesting. Yeah, like it's Tim's viewpoint. He's welcome from it, like from the media and from his media's perspective, but also from his perspective as an athlete. But I can see what you mean. Yeah, making, you know, singling those guys out because they're different. Perhaps the wrong way to go about it. But yeah, interesting topic of conversation, Jermaine.
Okay.
I lose my mind. I'm losing my mind. Anyway. Yeah.
Yes. You just grow your hair back and get your powers, Samson and Delilah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I should read those reviews. I got halfway through Jody Fisk's review. We said, great podcast, great guests, always gives me a laugh, my commute to work, even some decent running advice with the big teeth emoji. Like, not really sure about that, but yeah, anyway.
That's what we need.
Keep it going, guys, it said from Jody. Thanks, Jody. And we've got the next one, it's a long one. It's a letter to us from Runner Girl Ruby. Says, hello.
Is it first or second class postage?
It's first class postage with five stars. It says, hello, okay. Sean and Jermaine, aka White Devil and Grandma Kid. I'm not sure what the full demographic of the podcast listeners are, but I thought I would give you an honest review as a 17-year-old listener. They've listened since day one, podcast one, when they were 14 years old. First, let me say a big thank you for all of you behind the podcast. I'm a UK distant athlete and fellow steeplechaser with hopes and dreams to break it into senior international ranks in the future. And love the insight into all things athletic that the podcast provides. Appreciate your efforts you go to as fab hosts to look into the lives of athletes currently performing at the highest level. I am an avid long run listening, and I'll admit, although I hope my coach isn't listening, I've had to extend runs to finish episodes as I have no self respect.
That's quality!
To wait until tomorrow's run. Each episode never fails to make me chuckle and crack a smile, which must look very odd to passers by. I love the very.
I'm going to cut it. We should do a really, really long one. And it'd be like, oh, I did a 2-hour run, coach. I'm sorry.
I love the varied and up-to-date, not to mention numerous content you create, so keep up. Love the bus chat. And then they've got a laughing emoji. Thank you for spicing up my runs. Oh, and of course, a 5-star review for me. So, Ruby, thanks for taking the time out to write that. That's interesting to see where the perspective is coming from. So thanks a lot for the review.
Dang. And talking about bus chat.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you, how's it been going?
I got a story fresh from today. Fresh!
Spill it. Go on. Spill the story.
So, Wharf Road, Hennings Elephant and Castle.
Yeah.
Most bus stops are before traffic lights.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm pulling in and someone wants to get off, and it is this girl, fairly good looking, but she's got an amazing bum, right? And she's wearing... Don't worry, it's not perverted.
Yeah, okay.
She's got amazing bum, but she's wearing like these super tight lycra.
Yeah.
So I'm pulling in and I stop before the bus stop. She don't want to get on, so I leave the doors closed, front doors. But people are getting off. But I've got my window open, and there's a car pulled up, obviously, outside the bus lane. And there's this guy hanging out at the window trying to chat her up. And I was like, quality, right? And he's like, oh, can I get your number? And she was like, no, it's all right. And then he was like, yeah, I know you're all right. That's why I'm asking for your number. He's like, let's go have a drink. So I was like, this guy. He turned the negative into a positive. I was like, I like his style.
How much further did it go? Did he get the date?
Well, then the traffic lights turned green.
Yeah.
So I had to pull forward and I had to cut him up, you know, like break it up. But she was obviously not interested, so I probably saved her.
You saved the day, Jermaine. She was getting accosted by some weirdo. It's amazing when you look. It's amazing when you look out for it. How many times do you see weird men shouting at women in the streets?
I don't know. For me, I always think it's hilarious when I see someone trying to chat someone up.
Yeah.
And I always say to my girlfriend when she goes out, I say, "Did anyone chat you up?" And she'll like be defensive and say, "No." I say, "No, it's fine." Because I want to know what lyrics they got. I was like, present? How do they drop it? That's how I am.
You keeping a spreadsheet of all the successful lines?
Good tips. Yeah, good tips. I was like, oh shit, that's a good one. I'll have to use that one.
Did I tell you about that bloke I saw in the park down here in Amsterdam who saw a girl stop who was wearing Lycra? So he went into the bush and he threw some water over his top to pretend he'd been running. Did I tell you see that one?
Yeah.
He came back, oh, I've had a great run. Yeah, what an idiot. Anyway, if you're out there, don't be shouting at no women unless you're near Jermaine so he can pick up on your tactics.
And then I could tell everyone.
And add to your spreadsheet, yeah. Nice. Well, I better leave you go wearing those boots, Jermaine. Getting ready for, when's the next game? You playing this weekend?
we played.
Yeah, what happened?
We lost 6-1. So the manager goes, "John Jermaine, I'm going to stick the match is just about to start. He goes, I'm going to stick you on for 5 minutes, and then he said, I'm going to take you off because the good players have turned up. You could be linesman. I'm like, oh yeah, thanks, Captain.
Yeah,
right. So I'm on. They score a bicycle kick from a corner, so it's a crazy good goal.
Yeah,
then. We make subs, the other players that came late come on.
Yeah.
And then the goalie was just making blunders. So he'd make the save, like parry it, instead of like go to catch it. And then as he does it, he hits it with one hand and punches it in the goal. the goalie was just doing his really silly blunders. He'd kick it and it hit his other leg and it'll go in the goal.
Are you basically playing in a team with the Raggy Dolls from COTB?
It was so funny. And like, we were losing, 4-0 at half-time? Yeah. And you think if you're losing 4-0, everyone's going to be depressed. We was all taking the piss at the goalie and had cracking jokes. It was well funny.
You need to get a video camera down there and get it on like... Is it, remember when we were kids, there'd be videos that were called like TV, football's naughtiest blunders or whatever, or... But on you being framed. Anyway.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Enjoy the weekend's game.
All right, cool.
Nice one, Jermaine.
All right, Sean, I'll see you. And people, I'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.